Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police departments. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 0.035% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching never changed anything.
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't, lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
That's how we work. That's how. Today on It's My House, we got a... let me bring on my co-hosts here. Reba, you there? Or might not be Reba. Different phone number. 773, your mic is open. You there?
Okay. Mama Evelyn.
Oh, Mama Evelyn. Okay. Hold on, Mama Evelyn.
Okay.
Today's podcast is titled Don't Sell Mama's House. Okay. Don't Sell Mama's House. That's the name of today's podcast. So we have Mama Evelyn, and then Reba might call in. Then Albert Lee from California will be calling in as well. So since Mama Evelyn is here, good morning, Mama Evelyn.
Good morning.
Well, I titled today's podcast, Don't Sell Mama's House. Matter of fact, I was on a Clubhouse, which is a social media app, last night, and they were talking about don't sell grandma's house. So it struck me, wait a minute, don't sell mama's house. Because once I consider mama's house or daddy's house or the whatever, it's the generational wealth house. It's the ancestral wealth house. It's a house that you can usually come back to if you need to start over or, you know, when it passes from one generation to the next. That next generation, particularly if the parents or the grandparents paid off the house, they don't have to start all over again from zero. And then you got siblings that fight over stuff like that as well. So I formed a club last night on the Clubhouse app titled Don't Sell Mama's House. I've done, just today, we've done like three or four announcements to promote it. Now we have this form. So coming back to you, Mama Evelyn, what are your thoughts on that?
Okay, let
selling,
me look at it.
Selling mama's house or grandma's house. So don't sell it.
Don't sell it. And this is why. I know you know about the Great Migration.
The Great Migration 1 and 2, yeah.
Yeah, they would pool resources to buy houses. So when people came, I'm using Chicago. So when they came to Chicago, they would have somewhere to stay until they got an economic base for themselves. The other thing about the houses, the reason that they bought houses, is because families got together at least once a week. And they got together to share love. And it cut down on the trauma that was going through the family because they had somebody who they knew was there. Before you decide to sell mama's house, think of this. You may not have children today, but one day you may have children. And one day those children may have a question that you personally can't answer, but you might have a sister, a brother, an uncle, an aunt, a cousin, somebody who can. And you will always have a location to say, come, let's join together.
Right.
It might be, there's a number of things that you can do with a house other than sell it. But it is still the economic base of the family. And it's meant for you to grow from, not to get rid of.
So, right. Yeah. I told Cher this last week, the week before last. I have a house in Washington, D.C., where the my next-door neighbor there, matter of fact, is the longest neighbor I've ever had thus far. And over half a century. And she's 101 years old. And she
Thank
had two
God.
Children. And she's in a nursing home now. Now, why she was placed in a nursing home, I do not know. But she's alive right now at 101. In a nursing home. So she has two children that one is a daughter, and the daughter might be, I'm figuring, at least 80. And then she has the other child, he's in his 60s. Now, both of her children have children, and they probably have grandchildren by now, which would make her a great-grandmother. So she's in a nursing home right now at 101. And the two, like I said, I don't know the backstory on that, but her two children that she gave birth to decided to put her house on the market. Now, before I give you the backstory on that, let me give you more backstory on her. We'll call her Mrs. B for now. No.
Okay.
Mrs. A. Let's call her Mrs. A. She's not dead. let's call G for good. Good, because she's a good person.
Okay.
All right, so Miss G. So Miss G is 101 in nursing home. So now Miss G came up from South Carolina. She got married. I knew her husband. I was a little boy when my mother bought the house next door. So I know they bought that house for probably under $18,000. Her husband, Mr. G, passed away probably in the late 70s. I think he passed away before 1980.
Okay.
She was driving into her 90s. By herself, and she had raised her two children to get their high school diplomas. I don't know if they went beyond that, but they both got their high school diplomas. They both started families. They both had their own places. And when she was in her, I'm guessing in her 50s, or at the earliest, somewhere in her 40s, she decided, now this is after she had raised her two children to graduate high school, and her two children had already started their families. She decided in her 40s or 50s to go back to night school and get a GED.
All right.
And by that
sound
time,
like
she had already paid off the house. She had paid off the house, successfully raised, you know, with her husband, the two children. So she really didn't need to go back, but she wanted to go back because that's something that she wanted to do. So she bought the house for under, like I say, under $18,000, because she was already in the neighborhood when my mother bought the house next door, and my mother bought the house next door for $19,900.
Okay.
So this is like the early 60s. So before Kennedy got assassinated, it goes back that far. So anyway, now the house sold within a week because the house is in a decent neighborhood in D.C. The neighborhood's being gentrified. From the front door of her house, or former house, because my house is... It's a semi-detached house. It's a duplex. From the front door, walking to the subway platform, it's like a 7-minute walk, less than 10 minutes. And you got all kind of shopping that you can walk to. You can walk to the Walmart. You can walk to the Five Guys Burger Place. You can walk to grocery shop, you can walk to the dry cleaner, you can walk, and there's short walks. All right, so it's a very convenient area, and it's about walking distance. You can walk from the front door to the Maryland line of Prince George's County in less than 10 minutes. If you drive, you'll be there in less than 30 seconds, or no more than 30 seconds. Okay, so Very convinced. So the house sold for $500,000+. I'm going to put it at $500,000. It sold for more than that, $500,000. Now, when I heard that, oh, and let me tell you the people that they sold to. Now, they sold to an Asian family. Nothing wrong with that. The Asian family that they sold to owned a nail salon. And the customer base of the nail salon is primarily black women.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I heard that, essentially, and that's why I've come up with some, we got a clubhouse channel, we got two of them. One is called Golden Goose Skills, and the one that we opened up last night, and the name of this podcast today is Don't Sell Mama's House. We'll have Albert Lee in here soon to talk about Amish economics and how this ties into that. But I was thinking, and the reason why I related to the fable, the goose that laid the golden egg, because when they sold that house for $500,000, and my prediction is that $500,000 will be evaporated within the next 36 to 60 months. I know 10,000 of it is already gone because one of the siblings built a deck on the back of their house, and that cost them at least $10,000. So that's $490,000 gone already. But the grandchildren of Mrs. G, the great-grandchildren of Mrs. G, if they need to start over, if they need to start at all, if somebody gets sick and can't work, they can no longer go to that house. And on top, which I consider the goose that laid the generational wealth golden egg, and on top of that, none of her grandchildren can, or really children at this point, because they've already spent some of the money, can go back into a similar neighborhood in Washington, D.C., or any neighborhood, and start off, because at the $500,000 price tag, that goose mm-hmm. has been cooked, is done, is in the hands of somebody else, and it'll probably stay in that, it might stay in that next running for 100-plus years. We don't know. But, and it's been rampant, because this happened in Washington, D.C., Washington, D.C. back in the 70s was called Chocolate City because the primary demographic, which was African-American, was in the city. Now it's swung mm-hmm. down to 43%. But this thing, and let's just take the race issue out of it or the color thing issue out of it. It's rampant all across the United States where you have children that are adult children that are selling the goose that laid the golden egg for that family, which means if a family needs to start all over, and family members do occasionally need to start from scratch. I mean, start all over. But they have a place to go to. But once you sell it, there's no place to go to. Not where you don't have to worry about rent, property taxes and mortgages and that type of thing. So, anyway, that was the inspiration for today's Don't Sell Mama's House, and we'll have Albert Lee on here shortly, and he'll talk about how he looks at it, particularly when it comes to Amish economics, because in the Amish community, in the Mennonite community, and in some other communities, where when they build the house, they build it up from debt free, and it passes from generation to generation to generation. But overall, globally, when people sell that house, they're killing the goose that laid the golden egg. So that's my rant for for this morning. Well, Mom Evelyn, any comments?
Okay, so let me give you a piece of knowledge to pass on when you're talking about that. Look at the word inheritance. Don't it say in her, or does it say in his?
Touche.
That's the number one clue that they were telling you to hold on to what you get from your mother and grandmother. That's the reason it's called inheritance and not inheritance. And that's not a disrespect to men. And I don't know, a lot of states, if you want to look at the laws, the reason that they didn't want us to learn that, in the state of Illinois, do you know that when you used to get married here, I don't know if the law was still the same, because I have no intentions to get married again at this age. It says that you become the property of your husband and everything that you own. So those kind of laws, they want us. Now, they don't do it to their people. They don't enforce it with their people. But they more than likely, 95% is going to enforce it in our communities or any other community that's not European. They want you to lose your heritage. And if we are selling property that came from our parents and grandparents, then what are we saying about our appreciation of them and what they have taught us? Are we telling them that they no longer matter? Are we saying to them that the stuff that you taught us while you were alive doesn't matter? Because I'm giving away part of the foundation of what you gave to me. And see, and that's what we have to re-challenge our people to think about things before we act. You know, before we act. Or as they used to say in the old days, all money ain't good money. And if
that's
they
true.
Sold a house,
now,
for,
you're absolutely right about
if they
that,
sold
Mom,
a house for $500,000, they didn't get $500,000. How much of it went into taxes that they had to give back to the
right.
government for selling it?
The tax man gets his first. Caesar gets his cut first. You're right.
I'm saying we are no longer challenging young people to think. We are not putting them questions out there for them. We're not talking to them. And that's the reason we are losing our children the way we are losing them now, because they're trying to gather things that they own and do not know their true history. When the last time you walked on down the street you live on and talked to the young people? But when you were coming up, it happened all the time with
remember.
The elders.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
I can't even remember on my part.
I'm just saying, even in the building that I live in, there are days I go sit down in front of the building and just talk to the young people that are walking past. Because whether I gave birth to them or not, they still belong to me. They still my children. And when we lost that concept that if you look like me, you part of me, that's when we started losing our children. We got to open up our eyes. And it's got to be some intergenerational claiming. Them people that's 60, 70, and 80 years old that's sitting in their house sitting on the laundry, somebody got to knock on the door and say, Granny, can you talk to me? But they got to be able and willing to talk to these young people. We have to go back to challenging their minds. We're not doing it. All we're doing is complaining about them. And guess what? You the reason you got to complain. If you ain't doing nothing to make change, you ain't earned the right to complain about anything. Oh, you made me get angry this morning talking about getting rid of Granny's house.
All right, wait a minute now. Let me get Reba in here. We don't need you to get mad. But you just dropped some jewels here, particularly in her. That
it,
I mean,
is
that,
it really
that
getting
it
mad, or is it getting serious?
Well, you know what we did in our family. And you know what? And I'm so grateful for the parents that I have and the older brothers and sisters. Some of them I still have. Because we knew at my mom's house, we did not sell my mom's house. What we did, and she had left it to all of her children. What we did is one of my sisters that lived, because she had a two flat that lived there with us, we all signed our shares over to her because she was living there. So now that's an ancestral base for her family.
Okay.
Okay, you know what I did with my house. People got mad with me, but I couldn't take it. After my grandsons got killed, the last one, I gave mine to a nonprofit, to a male reentry program, because I couldn't take it anymore. I kept feeling like I would hear them coming through the door, and I would be looking for them, and I know they wasn't there. I couldn't take it. It was too much stress
that
and trauma for me.
Very understandable.
You know, but I gave it to some black folks who doing stuff for other black folks.
Okay.
I didn't hear
Reba,
you
there?
I thought she said something.
I think Reba was talking to somebody else. Well,
but you
anyway.
They can steal our property from us by using taxes. And most people don't know that's the reason they came up with the taxes, to take the land back whenever they got ready.
Well, that happens quite often. Which when I found, well, that's rampant too. That's rampant too. That's another reason why we're going to have this as a regular series. And then, like I say, on Clubhouse, I formed a club last evening. And we're going to have offline events titled Don't Sell Mama's House or Don't Sell Grandma's House. Particularly, I mean, with that and her, you're right, because it's rampant across the board. And it's been going on for centuries or whatever. So people, I figure, they need to be educated on estate, what do you call it, the estate planning.
Estate planning.
Right. And some strategies that people need to be aware of. Even these things called reverse mortgages, which I think should be outlawed, a lot of those were targeted towards African-American women. So not exclusively, but quite a few. So, but in this case that I gave, once again, the house was paid off, so Mrs. G, who's in a nursing home at 101, her grandchildren and great-grand will have to start all over. I mean, they got to start from zero. And it's a wealth transfer. So that, I mean, now if you, let's do a little bit of arithmetic here. That's $500,000. All right, so imagine if in one subdivision, you had maybe 10 other families that did the same thing, which is easy to do in a city the size of Washington, D.C. That's $5 million worth of wealth that is transferred out of that particular demographic.
Mm-hmm.
Just one little subdivision. You know, and that adds up to billions of dollars. So That's why I started the club on Clubhouse titled Don't Sell Mama's House. We will soon have merchandise, baseball caps, hoodies, T-shirts, and the whole nine yards to get this out here, because essentially it's rampant, not just with black communities, but the American population at large. You have children and grandchildren that are fighting over the ancestral house, which we, and for this practical purpose, we call a mama's house or grandmama's house. And
I got news for you.
How long
has she been in the nursing home?
You know, I don't know.
Well, let me just ask you this question.
She's probably
think
been
about
in
this
there
when you're explaining this.
Since January of this year, at least.
When you're explaining this to people about the ancestral homes, how do you know that she may not get well As long as she can prove that she's in the right mind, she's not obligated to stay in that nursing home. What if she decides she wants to go home?
She can't go back to that house no more.
That's all I'm saying.
But that's a very good point.
What the children going to feel then?
Now, when I asked about her from one of her nieces, who was the real estate agent in the transaction, she said she was doing all right. You know, sound mind, because that's the first thing I asked. You know, she's still loosening and thinking straight. She said yes. So I do know that much.
And anytime she gets ready to leave that nursing home, she can. What are they going to say to her about them stealing her home from her? Because that's literally what they did. Did they get her permission?
You know, we're going to have a clubhouse check on that. Matter of fact, that's the basis of this podcast, It's My House. The original basis of this podcast, we don't talk about it too much, maybe once or twice a year, but we housejacking. So in this case, this was inheritance house hijacking, and that's exactly what happened. Her children, on the surface, hijacked not only from Mrs. G, but from the grandchildren and the great grandchildren. The house was hijacked.
Mm-hmm.
But it's
like, she told you about the seasoning business, right?
Yeah.
Do you know that it's left to my grandchildren and great grandchildren? Do you know they can never sell their shares? If they decide they don't want to be involved with it anymore, their shares are split with those grandchildren and great-grandchildren that want to be involved. They can't even sell it on the open market to outsiders.
No, that's the way. I'm glad you set it up that way. And see, it's that type of thinking that I want to get out here with, don't sell mama's house. Because, see, what you're talking about, the seasoning thing, those are eggs. Those are gold eggs. That can hatch, produce more geese, and those geese will lay more gold eggs, and that's how it goes from generation to generation to generation. And my new neighbors, who are which is an Asian family, nothing wrong with that, an Asian family which owns a nail salon. And if you've ever been inside of a nail salon, you know there are about 4, 5, 6 nail technicians in there. So those are all geese. That are laying golden eggs by the hour every day of the week, except for maybe Sunday.
And I don't know about that, but I know here they found out that a lot of them were not sanitized, and people were going to get their nails done and getting certain kind of infections, but they kept going back. I don't know when we got so crazy. Okay.
Well, we need more people. That's why, like I say, that's why we started the club last night. Don't sell mama's house, and I had to put it on this pod live stream this morning. Don't sell mama's house.
Well, why are you explaining it to us?
Because there's a whole lot in going on in mama's house.
Is why you explaining it to them too? Make sure you let them know that the United States lost in 1994 in the world court. And they have to pay us reparation, and what's stopping them is that we won't declare nationality. So it might be time for us to declare nationality and separate from the United States by removing us from their tax base and creating our own.
And that's a
so
whole
that might be an option for us, too.
That's a whole nother podcast, matter of fact. One of the podcasts I'm lining up on the topic that you're talking about, there's this disc jockey that bought 11 acres of land in Nevada, and he has formed his own country. Now, it's not recognized by the United Nations, but he calls his country, he calls his 11 acres Slow Jamistan. He's a DJ with about on 200 radio stations, but I'm going to have him on here. So for those who are interested in that, but he did it on 11 acres of land in the state of Nevada leaves him alone as long as he pays, you know, his yearly fees on 11 acres. All right, let's go to hold on a minute, Mama Evelyn. We have Albert Lee on. Albert Lee is calling in from California. Good morning, Albert.
Good morning out there.
Glad you are. Now you've had a chance to listen to the program. And I want your comments on Amish economics in relationship to Don't Sell Mama's House. But let's start off with Albert. For those of you who don't know who you are, could you explain, you know, who you are and your background?
Yes. I was born poor years ago, had nothing. You guys are talking about inheritance. I never had an inheritance. I created something from negative position that I grew up in. And the thing is, I self-educated myself. I've written 4 or 5 books, and I got one on how to make money 24 hours a day. And that was real estate. And I went on through college, graduated with a business degree, got a broker's license later, real estate broker's license. I invested, which once upon a time I used to have over 40 properties. And like I said, I didn't have no inheritance. My parents was my inheritance. And you can't depend on that all the time. I mean, because it might not be there. You might have parents who grew up poor themselves, and they never organize what wealth is. And that's another subject. High school do not teach about money. They teach about getting jobs. That's it. And so what you guys are talking about is self-preservation, where you go out and research these things and see what's better for you. Now, getting back to my story, I was just always ambitious to want to get ahead. And I had to learn about real estate through doing claims adjusting at one of the first financial or insurance company that I worked for when I graduated out of college. I didn't know nothing about real estate, and most blacks don't. That's why they end up selling properties, giving properties away, because they're not educated on what Lee says, the golden goose. They don't realize what that's all about. That's the education itself. And most blacks do not have that. Trust me. Okay, you're talking something that's way ahead of their times. When you're talking about real estate, I've seen real estate given away. Pennies on the dollars. And the blacks that sell those properties are totally satisfied. Where that property is sold for, say, $10,000, the other person that bought it is going to sell it for $100,000. This is the problem that we have right there. That is the problem. Getting back to me, I learned this by doing appraisals. I created appraisal business also. I created eviction business also, all real estate are in it. And what I've seen praising real estate is what I just said. Properties are given away for nothing. Evictions I've seen because the black tenants in those properties do not realize they got to have a place to live wherever it is. They got to have a place to live. And when you're talking about owning a home, that's like owning a Rolls Royce in the black community. They don't understand that. And the thing is, we as black people have to study things to get to understand things. Becoming wealthy is not easy, and it's another job to understand. Because if you like what we're talking about in the real estate, you have to be successful. And so that's when I got into the business. I was in my 20s when I started. And after I got out of college, went worked for Hartford Insurance and real estate claims, property claims, that's real estate. I learned a lot on just trial and error. And I kept saying, my parents was poor. My parents had nothing. They couldn't give us nothing if they wanted to, okay? And also for Christmas, holidays, they had to borrow money from the finance companies to buy their gifts. So how can I expect and would expect to get some from the parents? So what I had to do is create something from nothing. And I started in a double minus position. And what I mean by that, I wasn't even with the most of the people in the country when I started. I had to start at zero minus whatever. But it could be done. It could be done, but you got to think in different perspectives in real estate. You show me most blacks, maybe the new generation might have a good start now, but 30, 40, 50 years ago, it wasn't there. It was not there. And to own real estate, let me back up on this, too. I was listening to you guys' program. You never own real estate, even if the mortgage paid off. Why do you think I'm saying that, Lee?
Repeat that again, Albert.
You never own real estate, regardless if you had no mortgage.
Oh, the reason why is, and I've explained this a long time. If you look at, let me put it this way: the real estate, once again, is housing that is permanently attached to the land, and it's real estate. Now, once it's permanently attached, once that housing is permanently attached to the land. All right, and a housing could be a duplex, it could be a single-family home, it could be Buckingham Palace. Once it's permanently attached to the land, your de facto senior partner is the local taxing authority.
That's right.
And
right.
If you don't, which is the municipality. So if you don't pay the municipal taxes that come out once a year, or if you don't pay the municipal water bill, which depending on what part of the country, some people have them, some people don't. Then they can sell that house to the highest bidder at their tax sale.
Yeah.
Then, of course, there's a time period
that,
or whatever. But you really don't own real estate.
No.
Now,
mobile
homes or housing that is not permanently attached.
That's a different story.
The formal name is Allod, A-L-L-O-D.
Mm-hmm.
And Allod is the senior partner. But if you have like a mobile home or any type of housing that is not permanent, that could be on skids, blocks, or whatever, and have a skirt around it where it looks aesthetically pleasing, then that's private property, and that's not assessed on a yearly basis.
That's the point.
And you actually
right
own that. Now, you probably have to pay ground rent, or if it's private land, you'll pay the yearly taxes. But depending on where that is, like I've mentioned on here several times, I've got 10 acres of land in Texas, rural Texas, and my taxes on that this year, and I pay them late every year. This was like $38.70 or something like that, under $220 bill.
Yeah, that's the game. Okay, that's the game. But the point is, what I'm saying is, go back to where I'm going. You know, I've been to a lot of real estate auctions. What you just mentioned about tax sales and. I have done, not bragging, but I've done everything you can think of in real estate. Brackley, there's nothing you can tell me that I don't know, okay? And I have showed up at property tax liens and all that. Who owns the United States is the United States, okay? And I've seen property that has $200,000 and $300,000, $400,000 equity. And they end up losing their property behind maybe a $15,000 or $10,000 tax lien. And the point is, that's another area where most blacks don't understand. And I'm just saying that. They don't understand that. And behind that, you got the overages, which means you got companies going in behind these tax sales, picking up this owner's equity. Are helping them get their equity, but they're charging 40 or 50% of what they collect. But still, the point is, you never own your house. And I had to teach this to my father-in-law years ago. And he used to follow me in my investments and stuff like this. But all you want to do, the average public people that live out there should keep the taxes current. When you pay off your mortgage, you're still not debt-free. Just remember that. Now, the Amish, going to the Amish way of living, and we've talked about it, Lee and I, but the Amish people, they build in groups. They build homes. But when you think about it, it's still taxes, but they don't have the debt that most people get into when they buy a house. You got the mortgage, and you got the taxes got to pay. So you got the average person has two things to worry about, and the Amish only have one. And I bet you they get together and pay the taxes off as a group. And they
well,
never
say. Yeah, Derek, let's talk about Amish economics, Albert, in relationship to don't sell mama's house. And let's take the community of Yoder, Kansas, which is, well, it's an Amish town. It's got less than 200
Amish
people live there. Now, you've actually been there, so share with us, because I think most of the families in Yoder, all of them have a business, I believe.
Yes.
And like you say, they get together and they built their residential homes together as a collective.
There you go.
But anyway, break all that down to us.
Okay,
Yoder, nobody, Mama's house is never lost in Yoder.
No. That's right, because Yoder is a type of community. That's what it is. That it's very few more Amish live there. Matter of fact, Amish is hooked up with Mennonites as well. I'll say that.
Right.
But
right.
But when you come to the Amish, I went through that part of Hutchinson, which hooks up to Yoder. Yoder was named after the famous author and developer that developed Yoder, Yoder. And I was telling Lee earlier, once upon a time we were talking there, I went to where they serve meals, breakfast, and stuff like that.
Mm.
And what the fascinating part to me was, it's all in the family. And what I mean by that, is they're packing houses, they're meat sources, you name it, gifts, all that, they make those. They don't have nothing they do on the outside. And they don't have to speak to, they don't have to answer to anyone else. And that's why they have that insanity as far as if I can't talk to my brother to get this worked out, I got a problem. And they're not talking about the outside. They're not talking about the banks. They're talking about within the community. And the breakfasts, the restaurant places there, it reminds me of the type of food similar to what we grew up on as blacks. That's the kind of food the diet is not really, I would say, excellent. But the idea is when you eat your breakfast meal, they don't owe nothing to pay it back. That's pure profit from them. And they live very frugal. I mean, I don't expect us to be riding around in buggies. But you need to take some ideas from that system and utilize it, okay? Because we as black people, we spend too much. We overspend what we make. Amish people do not spend nothing at all. It's all labor or it's all services among their community. And Yoder is a little town, like Lee mentioned, maybe have 200 or 300 people. And when you need to go there and check it out, you'll be really surprised the way they live. And they have big homes, but they're not fancy homes where you maybe spent $500,000 or $600,000, $1 million for. It's a home they
well,
started.
The first thing, Albert, is like we both mentioned, they as a collective They build homes and they help each other build homes. That's yeah. They do not participate in the. That's one major nugget that we can take from the Amish and Mennonite community, that they do not participate in the banking system. Matter of fact,
no.
We have a clubhouse tonight, and we'll do one on here. And the title of that will be. And most people don't realize this. Houses are basically not, the average house in the United States, or even globally, is not for the homeowner. The average house is really designed for bankers.
Yes.
Bankers and local municipalities, they're the ones that profit off those houses.
Yes.
Not the individuals who get those mortgage loans. So like you said, I'm glad you brought up with the Amish and Mennonites. And you don't have to be Amish and Mennonite. Your records on here, you know that I played the Nine Friends thing a gazillion times. It's you just have to get a collective of people together and help each other build those houses.
Can we do
that,
Lee? But can we do that as blacks? Can we do that?
Well, Reba's going to do it. Matter of fact, where's Reba at? Reba, are you there? Reba? All right, Reba.
Yes, I'm here. I just had to come back to my screen.
Yeah, Reba. Now, Albert asked a question. Can we get together? I was about to tell him, you have three sons. So, Reba, what are you planning on doing with those three sons and building your little tiny house?
I want each of them to, from there, build their own. We help them build their own and then teach them how to market, as we discussed before, to build wealth. One of my sons is a cement mason, so he got that skill through Job Corps. And they are the grandsons of a three-area tradesman who could build a house from the ground up. So we want to follow in the tradition of our ancestors who used to build those shacks. What do they call them? The shacks?
I call them shotguns. Shotguns.
Okay. So, yeah, that's
the thing. Your dad was, you told me the three, what was his three trades, the three trades he had?
He was an electric, a carpenter, journeyman plumber, and electrician.
That's money in the building. That's money in the building, the houses right there.
Yeah.
Because I have a nephew that he's an electric. He's a contractor. I mean, he's working to get his license. But he come to me and he said, "Albert, I want to buy a house." He didn't own anything. And I said, "Okay, you give me 6 months working with you, I'll get you in a house." And most people think it takes a lot of money to go the conventional route. I never went that conventional route. The creation was the fascination to me. And I told him, I said, "Okay, Dustin, I'll get you in a house." In 2020, he bought a house right around from his folks. And I had told him, I said, "Your folks going to get jealous of this because you're buying something that they've been owning for 30 years or more." And so he bought the house for $250,000. California is not cheap to live in. Lee knows that. And so he bought the house for $250,000. Now, since this, I call it surge, hit in California, this virus surge, his house is good for $450,000 now. And he only owned that house for 1 year, 1.5 years. But now, getting back to what I was saying earlier, Now he can leave something to his family, but the problem is with most of us, and it's not only blacks, but it's everybody that don't manage money. They waste it. They got to buy a brand new car or brand new. Not a house. I'm never going to argue about buying a house because that's an investment. But a non-developing interest making a deal would be transportation, if you're not using it in a way to make money with. Also, the house will work 24 hours a day. That was the name of my book, my first book I wrote. But now I've seen other people buy clothes, expensive jewelry. You see a lot of these singers around here that maybe made it to where they want to get in life, but they're tearing down the estate because they're buying junk. It's not worth anything. And see, what I've learned is you buy what works while you're not working. The Amish people believe in that, too. And you don't have to be Amish, like Lee said. You need to learn their way of living. People laugh at them on certain things, like, now, I don't believe in, again, I said the horse and buggy stuff. But when it comes to the real estate, which is my interest, I want to know how are they doing it. What can I take from that to better
my business? What you can take from that, if you look like, right, where the horse and buggy thing, they live in communities where the population is low, and the lower the population in many parts of the United States, it's less government.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
What, like a horse and buggy will probably be illegal in Los Angeles, California, Seattle, Washington, D.C., Miami, those places. However, they're in counties where you can do that. And
yes.
And a lot of those counties that I've personally been in, you didn't even need a building permit. I went to a community in West Virginia. You didn't need a building permit to build a house.
No.
And then in Oklahoma, I went to three communities where you did not need to pull a city, a town. Oh, these are little towns. All right. Town, and I called the county just, you know, to make sure. And the county bounced me back to the town. So there are a lot of communities throughout the United States, you know, this micro communities, those tiny communities, where you don't even have to pull a building permit. Now,
that's
granted,
right.
you know, you do need to know, get somebody that's skilled at, you know, putting it together. But just like, I mean, when I was in Taft, Oklahoma, there were vehicles that 45 minutes away in Tulsa were not street legal. But in Taft, Oklahoma, they're street legal. So I would suggest one of the things that you can look at when it comes to Amish economics is look for a community, what I call the real United States. They're communities within, and they're 19,500 municipalities that are in the United States. Now, unincorporated communities probably double the triple that figure I gave you, 19,500.
Mm-hmm.
All right,
mm-hmm.
Because like in Taft, Oklahoma, is a municipality. All right, but you have a lot of freedom in Taft. Now, 45 minutes away in Tulsa, Oklahoma, bigger city, more conveniences, more comfort, but
more cost. More
you have
cost.
Less freedom. Now,
right
next
cost.
Door to Taft, literally, is a place called Blackjack, Oklahoma. Good luck finding it on a map or whatever you use, the GPS on the Internet. But it exists because I've been there at least five times. It's literally it's right there with that. But it's an unincorporated community, which is probably over 100 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And both Taft, Oklahoma, and Blackjack, Oklahoma, those are places that I call the real United States.
Because
you can really, you have a lot of free, but now you need a skill set. You need certain skill sets to live in those places. But the thing about Blackjack, Oklahoma, Taft, Oklahoma, is a 15-minute or 20-minute ride away from Muskogee, Oklahoma. So if you want to go to Walmart, you want to go to the movies, you want to go bowling, you want to go to the pancake house, you want to go to the Mexican restaurant, the Chinese food restaurant, Subway sub shops, you want to go buy a brand new song from T-Mobile shop, all that's 15 to 20 minute drive away from Taft and a lot of other rural communities in that area. Now, you're not going to get an Uber ride from Muskogee to Taft, but you need to know somebody in Taft that can get you. But, you know, a lot in that neighborhood was a lot of people. Those folks walk. I've seen people walk.
Yes, I'm going to say that.
But at,
yes.
But at nighttime, though, it's pitch black.
Because
it's a way, no street lights.
It's
know,
a way of life, though. It's still a way of life.
It's a way of life, exactly.
And then what you think about, Lee, is, okay, you see that kind of properties around. You go through that properties. They might be building houses on it eventually, but the bottom line is, who really is the owner of that land? Okay?
Or in this case, Taft, yeah.
My wife's...
But what I like about it's like, see, the property taxes are low. And super low. And you can put your own well on there. You can legally harvest rainwater there. You can grow, if you want to grow tomatoes or any kind of vegetables in your front yard, you can. Now, 45 minutes away in Tulsa, Oklahoma, you can't.
It's a difference.
So
okay.
I'm looking at, like I say, rural places like that, the real United States, where you have, and matter of fact, in these little towns that I've been to in Oklahoma and some other places, they don't even have a police force. Taft used to have
a
policeman.
It's amazing.
Which was, I guess, a night watchman.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Because you can, I slept with the door wide, front door wide open.
I've heard
you know,
that.
So now you can't do that in a larger city. Okay. But now let's go back to the title of what we were talking about today, Albert. Don't sell mama's house. I have been able to go into these little towns, you know, and I've expanded my search since, my view since then, my net since then. And a lot of these towns, it's easy to pick up land from the children or the grandchildren that legally have title. Because a lot of them, like, I'll give you an example. One particular family, I was interested in their house, which was on an acre of land. And all three siblings, and there was a lot of history in that house because their father was the principal of the school. But all three of those kids, all three of the grown children, wanted to head to, they all moved to Atlanta. Atlanta, Georgia. And
what did they do with the house?
With three siblings, they couldn't agree on a price. So I went and found another house where I didn't have to deal with siblings, and I picked up a house that way and some land as well.
Yeah.
Later
sometimes
on, what happened with that house is the house caught fire, and I don't know what they've done with it since, but you know, I was offering them like $500, $600 a month. So for them, it wasn't enough.
They don't, Lee, like I said, they don't understand that terminology. See, you don't expect, you don't expect a black, especially blacks. Blacks are finally getting more educated now about real estate. I noticed over the years, I've been in it for 40-something years in real estate. Personally, I have. You've been in there for a while too. But the things that I have learned over the years is the education of knowing about the real estate. Real estate is the only thing on this earth that will make money 24 hours a day. I don't know anything else. Stocks, you can control those.
Well, stocks, and we got somebody on here that he knows his stuff with stocks. He makes money with it. My hesitation with stocks is it's regulated. I don't like things that are government controlled.
Whatever, that's right. Whatever, okay. But now what? Now just like the bitcoins, okay. We're looking at the bitcoins and cryptocurrency right now as we speak. I invested a little money in that. Look where we're at. I've lost 75% of my equity. in the last 2 or 3 months. Now, real estate, I've lost, I mean, when I first started, I've lost over $1 million. I'm just going to tell you the truth. But I've made over $5 or $6 million over the years. Okay? So the thing is, I don't see no return on stuff that you can't walk on, you can't see, you can't really you can't control. But each is to his own. But my feedback.
Like I said, we got a regular here, Pianchi. He's probably the most. He's very financially astute. I can't even see him losing money in anything he does. He's a what I would call him a master builder, because he didn't deal with little real estate transactions. He actually built, big buildings. You know.
Oh yeah. Okay. All right.
probably stadiums. He knows
about
ports.
But let me tell you.
He's pretty astute. He knows his business about stocks and Bitcoin.
Well,
so
he's
very financially aware.
A lot of people do, Lee, but it's each person. You talk to Warren Buffett, he's a stock man, whatever. You talk to Bill Gates, he's a computer man. He made a fortune in computers. Each wealthy person, most of them have their own niches. Okay,
right. Yeah, Bill Gates, software guy. So yeah, that's his lane. You're right.
Yeah.
Mark Zuckerberg
yes.
with Facebook, because I consider Facebook a glorified website. That's his lane.
That's right. That's
so
right.
So everybody's got their own lane.
Yes, and I just feel more comfortable of walking on my real estate, seeing it every day if I want to. Visible. It's not where you're just going by what they're saying or what you hear, but that everybody has a difference. But I personally, that's where I made most of my money, okay, was in real estate. And why would I shy away from it, okay?
Now, you're out in California, the Fresno area. Let me ask you this. Now, I know the coastal, the California coastal cities, I know, really, you were out there before, I guess, right when there was a boom or right there before the boom.
I was born.
But now
here.
Fresno's more central California, isn't it?
Yes, it's in between L.A. and San Francisco is north. We're in the middle of it. It's like a pie. You cut it in half. But we have, I mean, when I was born and grew up around here in Fresno, it was only 50,000 people living here at the time. And you were talking about leaving your doors open? Oh, we used to do that all the time. But now you couldn't do that because you're talking about a population over 1 million people right now surrounding
us. Fresno?
Yes, man, yes. Yes.
Man, Fresno's really grown, man.
Yeah, the average price of a home in Fresno is $425,000, $410,000. Average price, okay. Now, when I was growing up,
you got out there at the right time, then.
Well, yeah, it's the timing. And then again, like it's the timing, it's the staying power, and it's the belief that you know things going to get better. You just got to persevere, and see. They're building a train system through Fresno that go to L.A., San Francisco in a matter of 30-35 minutes. Bullet train, okay.
A bullet train, okay.
And that's going to give us more value as an observer of real estate and also appraiser. It's got to get better in next 5 or 10 years. Like I tell my sister, what I'm telling the audience on your podcast. In the next 10 years, a house we're living in will be worth $1 million or more, average price. Where in it, like San Francisco, L.A., they went through the same process years ago. Those people, a lot of those people been in them homes 30, 40 years, and they probably paid $100,000 for them, maybe $50,000. They're worth $5 or $6 million now, Lee. And my sister, I talk to her all the time. She listens to what I tell her because she believes in me. She bought a house $25,000 30 years ago. I rigged it for her, set it up for her on a lease option. That's another deal. Now her house is worth about $400,000, and she always tells me every time I talk to her, thank you, Albert, thank you. But you got to have vision in this business. That's what I like about it, see. And the whole
let's go back. Let's tie that into what we would, you know, a primary topic today. Don't sell mama's house.
Right.
So
that's the catch. That's
what
the catch.
Did you observe from the Amish that people in a, well, not only a high price area, because like say, mama's house is never put up for sale in Amish and Mennonite communities.
That's right. That's an off limit. That's off limits. Okay. Now, they don't get involved with too many rental properties, tell you the truth, because they believe in owning it. They don't believe in no mortgages. See, you got to understand that. Excuse me. No mortgages, no problem. Okay. Only
charge. So they, in other words, they don't even want to. They don't want to pay rent to anybody else.
No. No.
You know that. You know what? That makes a whole lot of sense.
Well, it's a rich sense.
So you got a whole community that thinks that way.
Yes, yes, yes. And everybody is living well because of it, see? And they don't have the stress that we have every day of worrying about, well, we got to pay the rent today or I got to make my house payment today. They don't have that worry, Lee. It's not there, okay? And that's why they live longer, I would say, because they don't have the killer stress every day. See, it works in a lot of different ways that's positive if you look at it. But a lot of people look at them as misers, but they're not out to have it. They're not taking toms every day and stuff like that.
I call them frugal. So I, you know,
yeah.
That now you don't talk. I didn't know. I did not know that they're not even. They don't get into the rental game as renters.
Yes.
Themselves.
Yeah.
So they rather build it and not pay rent.
There you go. That's why they build their own homes because they're trying to get away from being stressed out. Like in California, the rent in California, the average rent is $35,000 to $4,000 a month. Can you believe that?
No, I believe it.
Okay.
Because you got people out there. I saw a video on YouTube where, I mean, it was making fun of it. But, in California, you'll have, in Los Angeles or San Francisco, and I imagine along that whole coast.
Right,
San
Diego. Here, to say, right here in Fresno, is I do. Right here, Lee, in Fresno, my town, it runs about the same price now. And you know what that's telling me?
What's up?
Everything on the West Coast going to be at least $1,800,000 to $1,000,000 in the next, like I told you earlier, 4 or 5 years. And if a person's smart now versus the time that we were into it heavily, if you bought one house and just maintained it, you'd be a millionaire in a matter of a year. Think about that. You don't have to own 20 or 30 houses like we used to. The stress is less. But the greater the house that you buy now and can carry it, keep it on, paying on the mortgage and stuff, you'll be a millionaire in a matter of 2 or 3 years. That's a fact. Just on a home that you're living in. Can you imagine that? I used to tell my sister.
I had myself muted, Albert. I was answering you, but I had muted my mic.
Oh, it's all right, but I'm saying I have a sister. Go ahead on.
No, I was. Reba, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
No, not you. No, I was calling for Reba.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I'm here.
Reba, did you hear what Albert said? Now, the Amish and the Mennonite, they don't believe in paying rent, so we got to get your sons. They need to build their own places.
Uh-huh.
And then
that makes sense.
If anything, build extra buildings and rent the buildings
uh-huh.
out. But,
okay.
I
hi,
like
Reba,
that
how
thinking.
Doing? How you doing, Reba?
Hi. Hi there.
But you know, let me say this. The thing is, we need to keep our children out of debt, not the way we had to go into debt. Mm-hmm. And like I said, every family is not going to be born with a silver spoon.
Most
so, that's not going to happen because, like I said, my son in San Francisco, he lives in San Francisco, and that's why I tell you about it. You got to make so much money to live there if you're going to go the natural route.
Man, to live in San Francisco, L.A., or San Diego, I imagine if you're not pulling in, and I'm being conservative with this, if you're not pulling in $5,000 to $10,000 a month, forget it. And I think $5,000 probably would be too low for San Francisco.
That's what I was saying. That won't even cut it.
Yeah, that's probably too low for those two cities.
Yeah,
I would even say Chicago.
Yeah, you got to be making $200,000 to $300,000 a year to live here, where he lives.
Right.
And see, most people don't make that. Just be practical. But it's no reason why you shouldn't be able to put yourself in a position maybe to own a home, like we're talking $1 million, $2 million, $3 million. What they're doing in California, which is creative, it's more creative than it is anything. They'll take a couple million, like Airborne. You heard about them, okay?
Yeah.
Airbnb, whatever that is. What they're doing, they're putting people in houses, $1 million, $2 million houses. They're putting 5 or 6 people in there. They're paying $1,000, maybe $1,500 a month. You got your payment right there. But that's dangerous to do that, though, because the shift is coming south from San Francisco. They're moving to Modesto, Stockton, Merced, Fresno, Bakersfield, back down towards L.A. So the best way, like I said earlier, if I was starting all over in the game again, I would just buy one house, about $1 million house, and that way and control it instead of buying 20 or 30 and you stressing out over it because who's not going to pay the rent next month? You got to see, they don't teach these people in these books like we talked earlier. Yeah,
right.
you can get this house for nothing down, but they're not telling them how to keep them, okay?
Show me a nothing down house and I'll show you a lot of problems.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, nothing down houses typically come with problems.
And if, like her son, Reba, if they can build their own homes, let them build their own homes. That way they're starting pretty well debt-free, okay? Because, see, the thing is, your son's got the goods that most people charge for, the carpentry and all that stuff, see?
Yeah.
And that's a gift right there, see? And they can get things like wholesale where most people can't touch.
Right.
Yeah, well, her son that went through a Job Corps, his network alone, you know, because the Job Corps, you got the building trades all through that.
See,
that's a gift edge that she has already.
That's a gift itself right there, see?
Yeah.
And that's where when I was first beginning, Lee, I told you this before, I lost hundreds of thousands of dollars because I could not maintain my properties myself. I had too many of them. That's why I said, don't bog yourself down. Now, again, getting back to the Amish. Amish live that way. It's a principle. It's all. It's only common sense. Okay. Why would you bog yourself down with 10 or 15 houses and you can't get to them if the water break, plumbing problems? You name it, roof problems. How you going to get to all those houses by yourself? You need other people.
Yeah, it's very difficult. I got a friend of mine. He's been on here a couple of times. I'll bring him back. He's got about 7 properties. Man, he's doing stuff almost 7 days a week, you know, staying on top of those.
That's what I'm saying.
What you've got to have, and the Amish do this, which is another reason why they don't sell mama's house.
No, they don't have to.
They've got a cash flow business, like you were an appraiser.
Yes.
Okay. Mama Evelyn, she's probably got more than I know about, but what I remember right now, those spices. So those spices, you know, as she sells those, you know, spices, you know, she's not bogged down with a mortgage.
No, that's money.
Or a loan payment, you know, on that business. It's yeah, there you go. Cash flow.
That's what he's got to have. That's what I was getting at earlier, Lee, when I was saying that these books, the books that I used to read during my time when I was heavily into it, they would tell you good ways to get into buying a house or not putting any money on it. But the part is I've seen a lot of people go bankrupt after they buy all these houses because it's a secret to keeping them. And the way to keep them is don't buy no more than you can maintain. That's
personally.
The
and that makes sense because there's debt, you know, already. And maintenance, like the ceilings, the drywall just fell down off the apartment building that I'm using here in Chicago. And the landlord, the slumlord, she already said she wasn't going to exterminate and things like that. So, but ironically, I asked one of my sons to just listen in. I don't know if he'd like to speak, but he actually has worked on my brother's property. So I just really want to get his insight on that experience and how he felt about that. Bernard, are you still there?
Is he on your end?
Don't be ashamed. I'm just Albert Lee.
Okay.
Well, anyway.
Evelyn, you still there?
Yeah. Yes, I'm still here.
I think he's on the phone.
Hold on, Mama Evelyn. I want you to comment before we go to Bianchi. Reba, who's the guy that you got?
That's my son, Bernard. He worked on my brother's property, so he was able to see that my brother didn't have to pay nobody to do it. He knew how to do it himself.
Okay, all right.
So what was that like? What did you help with?
That's the key to it. That's the key.
So what did you do, Bernard?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, hold on. Bernard's speaking, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
You said, what did I do, period, like in construction?
Yeah, like what did you do when you worked on my brother's property? What, you guys just repaired and things like that?
Yeah, we repaired the floor.
How you doing,
like
Eric?
We never got to really finish on the project, though.
What was the reason? Why didn't you?
Well, I ended up leaving. I had to go back to Chicago.
Okay, but you look at the reality, though. Now, think about what I'm getting ready to say. He saved a lot of money, didn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now, let me ask you this. Have you completed a house completely rebuilt? Or you built it over? Have you ever done that before?
I came in on a project to help them finish the home. Well, yeah. I wouldn't say from start to finish, no.
Okay, now listen to this. Listen to this. You can go to an auction back there because I went to one in Hutchinson. I bought about Hutchinson.
Now, Elbert, I think he's in Cook County. Is that where you are, in Cook County?
Yeah, I'm saying, but that's still the Midwest, saying, Lee. I'm still saying
okay,
the Midwest.
All right.
You can go back to the auction there and buy something maybe for $5,000 or $6,000 if you had it, or even less, and don't worry about the house itself, what it looks like. Your talent would be to rebuild that house, and you'd make a fortune doing that, believe me, okay? Because I bought 11 lots in Wichita, Kansas. And because my wife was from back there, and I in a matter of 6 months I had over $100,000 in equities, and I only paid $50 for a lot, $100 for a lot, and I sold two to a church. I sold a church for one from it. But what I'm getting at is, you guys got talent. You got a talent like a person go get an education. But you got it in carpentry and hand work with houses, and that's the best thing that you can ever get for your education, because people gonna always need a place to live, always. Okay, I always say it this way: you gotta have something to go when you die. When you die, what do you got to be buried? And when you born, where do you come from? The hospital. Okay, so real estate is all the way there. You just got to utilize it. That's all. And you guys are young, and take advantage of it. He worked on my uncle's property.
Yeah. So he made Mama Evelyn's
on the line as well.
Yeah.
Right,
Mama Evelyn, any comment?
My thing is this. We still need to separate. There are black people that own land, and they're not paying any taxes to the United States of America for that land. That brother that you were talking about that bought the 11 acres, that is not registered by the, recognized by the world court.
All I know is he bought 11 acres of land in Nevada.
Yeah,
he bought 11 acres of land in Nevada, and from, as far as I know, he's paying property tax. I'm just saying, he calls his piece of land Slojamistan. He says it's a country, and it's not recognized by the UN. But
I'm telling you the steps. He has to declare nationality and make it sovereign land by making it tribal property. Look at the Moors. The Moors, the government got to pay them because of what Nubadhru Ali did in 1939. Nobody talks about them.
But that's rare. That's what I'm saying. It's very rare. On the norm, is the norm in the United States, it is taxes. It is. It's taxes. And the thing is, if the United States did not have control over the taxes of property, they claim the school systems wouldn't function. Municipality wouldn't function. But here, I can care less about that. But the problem is...
But why do you think they won't tell you about declaring nationality and separation?
Oh, we're getting into a whole other podcast now.
Because you're talking about
local government, state government, and federal government. Let's keep it simple. Don't sell mama's house. Let's just keep it right there. All right.
But you can't declare nationality and separate. They don't never have to worry about mama's house being taken or stolen.
Well, you're talking about an advanced concept, Mama Evelyn. We're with building blocks right now. You know, toy little building blocks. Because we had to learn the fundamentals. Don't sell mama's house or don't sell grandma's house, and then why, and then how we can train up people. We're at the across the border, no matter what race, nationality, or whatever. Because like I say, this thing of selling mama's house or grandma's house is rampant. So we got to deal on a fundamental level. The level that you're talking about is what I would call high finance or high. You know, it's advanced. Okay. So we got to crawl. Generally speaking, we got to crawl before we can walk. All right. And even getting it. Learning how to crawl takes some time.
Do you know how long the Moors have been getting paid from the U.S. government and owning their own land and not paying no taxes? Since 1940. Since 1940. This is not something new. It's just something that we refuse to accept that we can do.
Yeah. Where is that located at? What state or city is that located in?
They are all over. Nubadhru Ali showed something called the Southwest, Northwest Passage or something.
Uh-huh.
Now, you know what I will do? I'll give Reva some contact numbers of people who can get with you, explain it all to you.
Okay, sounds
because
good.
Because
okay,
it's happening, and every piece of land that I buy from now on will be separated from the United States.
All right, well, with me, as long as I keep on getting $38 tax bills, I'm good. But that's me. All right. All right. Once again, we'll cover that on other podcasts.
In Gary, Indiana, that he don't pay no taxes to nobody to because it's sovereign land and it's separated from the United States.
Now, Gary deserves a whole series on that because I haven't set foot in Gary yet. I've known some people that live there. I've only watched some video. Reba, were we close to Gary the time I was up in Illinois?
Not the direction.
You know when
the
cell phone reception dropped off?
You know, actually we were.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because
I know a couple of times the cell phone reception dropped off, and Pleasant said we were near, the, you know, the line.
That yeah, we were. Yeah. So, ironically,
but we were in the country then, though. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a touchy. That's a touchy.
Yeah.
That's a touchy thing.
Yeah.
Now, you know, each is to his own.
Well,
and,
well, that's another day. All right. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Let's go to another caller here. 314 area code. Your mic is open.
Well, LA, I've been listening
yes, sir.
To y'all. No.
How you doing?
You know, here's another thing. I like to have a discussion with somebody talking that craziness about going to have a separate country in the United States. Ain't no government paid no more. Where is that at? But here's the point. This thing about sell mama's house, that just
don't
depends.
Sell mama's house.
See, well, don't sell mama's house. Why not? If mama bought her house for $13,000 and it has appreciated to $100,000, what are you going to do? You think it's going to appreciate to $400,000 in these neighborhoods in the hood? It don't work like that. Houses are better.
Yeah, it did in Washington, D.C. and Baltimore, Maryland.
Yeah, all right. So if they house now is worth $400,000, what are they going to hold on to it till it gets up to $2 million?
That would be great.
Well,
you
it
equity.
Happened in San Francisco.
Something called equity, and you can get another property with some
well,
of equity.
Let me
hold on, but no matter what it appreciates to. Hold on, because Bianchi's got the floor. But let me put this in. Let me put because Bianchi does have the floor. And he waited a long time. The point, my point of view on it, and I'm just one person. My point of view on it: once the house is paid off, no matter what the value of the house is. Other family members, if they need to come back home for whatever reason, illness, sickness, they got to start over, they don't have to worry about rent or mortgage payment.
Well,
and they
that
don't
may
have to
be
start
the case,
from zero.
But it depends. It depends on where you are. I was a code official for a neighborhood outside of St. Louis, which is basically another hood. We had to turn down 99 homes. 99 homes that was in condemnation state. What happened to that idea with them? Nobody was going to move in those places because the whole community is tore up. See, it's one thing. You buy, I can give you another case, Ferguson. Blacks moved in Ferguson back in the 70s and the 80s, leaving North St. Louis to get away from the crime and everything else. Well, they had bought those homes, kept them up, had a good school district, but as people started moving from the city out in those areas, you know who I'm talking about, and after the 2014 riots, their properties that may have been worth $200,000, now they're being offered $40,000 for, so they left. So that depends. It ain't no sure thing. It just depends. And I say this, too. Let me say this, too. Blacks that real estate is Africa. Zimbabwe, Mugabe offered black farmers all the farmland they want. I know in Ghana, in the Fianca project, they had 35,000 acres they offered blacks. Blacks didn't go over there and take that. In Liberia, there's an area called, and I can't think of the name of, Gigi Project. That's 750 square miles. Do you know what 750 square miles look like? 750 square miles is available. But nothing. Blacks in America is not going to that get involved in that because they don't know how and don't have the means to do so.
Right.
Now, Now, let me tie everything you just said into today's title, Don't Sell Mama's House, because there's a lot involved with that. In my opinion, the young folk, or anybody of any age to be honest about it, but the younger the better, they need to sit, just like Mama Evelyn was talking about when she every time she's been on here, we need to catch them as young, in my opinion, young as possible, like when you say you were a code enforcement. All right, they need to learn at an early age, what is code enforcement? Why were these homes torn down, these 99 homes torn down? What could have been done on an individual, just household level? How can you keep your house up to code? I think education is the problem here.
I showed you a picture of the house I built. I've done the digging, put the foundation, I did everything. Plumbing, electric, and sheet metal. I've done everything. You've seen that picture, right?
Yeah, I have.
And what do you think about that?
Oh, it's A1 work. As everything you show me, including, you know, ports. I don't know anybody else that'll put together a port.
Let me tell you something.
Well, before you speak, let me put this out. See, you're doing, as a matter of fact, you and Marv Evelyn and even Elvis, all of you have done something similar. With your grandson, I've had one conversation with your grandson. And the one thing that you've done with your, well, it's more than one thing, but you have made sure that he has been exposed and educated to the opportunities that are out here. And you also often speak on kids should be involved, you know, with STEM. So that's all I'm saying. That's all part of what I find as Mama's house or Grandpa Pianchi's house, because it's just more than the structure. It's learning from our elders who know something that can keep the family house intact no matter what the value. The thing is
what you call family houses, in some cases it may work, like J.R. Ewing on Dallas. But if a house appreciates value, I'm selling. I'm not going to stay there in that house.
Which is your right to do so.
Absolutely, because it's wise business. Same thing as General was talking about Bitcoin as an option. I have Bitcoin platforms that earn 1.5% to 3% a day in gains. One that's solid 3% a week. So it depends on what you're doing. You don't hold things. Stocks and options, you don't hold things forever thinking it's going to go from $50 to $3 million. That's idiot. And I'm not saying he is, but I know people that do that. Now, especially in today's time, you can't do that. But no, this thing about land is looked at as an investment.
Yes.
If you're going to be greedy, now you're gambling. If you're going to set your limits, set your targets, 20%, 30%, then go with your 30% and leave it alone. Let somebody else mess with it. And you know another thing, too. I don't have no problem with paying taxes on home because taxes go to school, which are generally free, but really not. They go to building roads and other things.
How do you think that
a community is going to exist if you don't have some tax base?
That's true. I believe in that. Mm-hmm.
All right, y'all. I got to go down to get with my senior group. Talk to you in the morning.
Okay. Thank you, Mom.
Thank you for calling in.
All right. Thank you, Mom, for coming on.
All right.
Yeah. So, I build stadium, 20 and 30 story office buildings and all this stuff, bridges. If I was getting involved in real estate.
And see, that's all part of Mama's house, or Daddy's house, or Grandpa's house, too, Pianchi, because in my opinion, and I went to college on a basketball scholarship, but if I had to do it all over again, I probably would have taken it, but, you know, there.
Let me tell you what I did with my kids.
You have built stadiums. There's more money in building a stadium and owning the stadium than the highest paid athlete will ever get.
Yeah, that says it all right there, too.
And nobody talks about it.
Here's the thing. Let me tell you what I did with my kids. My last grandson went to school at Louisiana. He went to LSU. He didn't go to no historical black college. He go into the colleges that offered the education that they need. This whole stuff about glamour and symbolism is a bunch of bull crap.
Mm-hmm.
He was an outstate enrollee. In other words, he had to pay double. All right, I said, this is what I'm going to plan on doing. I planned on buying him a home in Baton Rouge. So he became a resident of the state. You didn't have to stay on campus, which is $24,000 a year. I bought a home. Mm-hmm. Well, at the end of his 4 years, and actually he double majored, so it was about 5 years, that house is damn near paid for.
That's
saving that $24,000. Plus it's a tax write-off.
Right.
Plus all the utilities and things of that, him coming out of high school was in his name. So guess what his credit rating is? It's over 800.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah,
there you go.
That's the way to do things. Right. What did he major in? What was the double major, Bianchi?
He majored in the highest and the most difficult engineering degree, and that was petroleum engineering. He needed 130 credit hours to come out of there. Plus, he double majored in business with an energy minor.
Beautiful.
Now he's learning to become an aviation. He's going for his aviation license. I work with him on that.
Mama's house or Papa's house, whatever you want to call it. That's where I look at it.
All companies, petroleum companies is knocking on his door. He went to work for, he's working with the ExxonMobil right now. And this stuff about people and the gentleman, what he said, you have to see all kids, everybody ain't made for everything. You got to go through the process to see what a person is good for. When he was little, and I noticed him in doing some dancing with an African dance group, I looked at his footwork and his handwork, and I said, you're going to be a good infielder, a shortstop in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what he did. When he came down here to Louisiana, he played for LSU travel team, and he still played baseball.
Beautiful.
But you have to go through a process to see what inner abilities a person has.
Let me ask you this question, because I had a friend of mine that was an electrical engineering major. That dude didn't have no social life for his undergraduate years. Your grandson must be excellent at time management. They have time to play baseball too?
Yeah, because I laid his schedule out. When he came to college, I laid his schedule out, and once he started and he stuck to it, he learned it and he stuck to it. That is, when he goes to sleep at night, transportation from the house to his class, in between class, lunch, and all. You got to do that for those kids. You just can't turn the key to lose.
He was dedicated. That's what it was. That's what I was saying earlier.
Sir.
He knew what he wanted, and you knew. So it was like a plan, and he worked that plan. And see, that's what I did with my son.
Bianchi laid him. Bianchi put out the what I would call the blueprint.
And his grandson followed, so that's good. I told him what he was going to be. I said, you're going to do these things, and if you want to do something else, but you're going to get these done first. See, you can't let kids make these decisions themselves.
Lino heard of my son. He lives in San Francisco. He's an attorney up there. But he created a business called Passing Down. All over the West Coast, going back east now. Whatever that big cable is, they offered to buy him out, $6 million. He said, no, I'm not going to sell. But he was taught from a baby. You know what to expect. You can do anything you want to do in your life. Just do it. That's all. And see,
That's what you got to do.
You did the same thing, obviously, because it sounds good what you've done. I respect that.
Absolutely.
I really do.
And I've been listening to you. You're doing some good stuff, too.
But it's the way
people say things that they make it sound all too easy.
Uh-huh.
It ain't nothing easy about this. You know how many hours I put in with my business?
Sure.
I might put in 16 or 18 hours a day.
Sure.
Sometimes I fall asleep with my head on the drawing.
That's me. I'm laughing. That's me. I mean, but you love it. You know that has taken you out of the darkness. Am I right?
I ain't worried about nothing.
I know that. That's what I'm saying. You shouldn't be. You paid the cost to be the boss, like James Brown said.
And then, too, you was talking about stocks. Yes, I learned stocks and options back in the 90s. Options now.
Well, see, that's
doing these cryptocurrencies because there's a lot of money in these things.
Yeah,
if you
well,
understand
I've,
what's
I've
going
learned,
on.
Yeah, I've learned. But I know what you're saying. And believe me, get me right now. Everyone has their niche. And that was just not mine. I tried to make it mine, but I'm not into it. You
well,
know, everybody.
You need somebody to explain to you which is the
there
best way. Because many people do things when it comes down to securities from a speculative position. No, you do things from a trade position. You never buy anything today that you can't sell by next Friday.
That's true. That's true. That's true. I learned that later. That's true. But the point is what I was saying earlier on the show. I like real estate because I made millions in it, okay? That's the only thing I understand is real estate and what makes it work. And then, like I said, I've done everything in real estate. I've owned eviction companies. I've owned appraisals companies. I'm a broker right now, licensed broker in the state of California. And the point is, I just slowed down. So I'm retirement age. I'm not doing young chicken here. I got grown kids. That, like I was telling you, my son's an attorney in San Francisco, works for the state of California there. My daughter is an associate. Both of them got PhDs, believe me, both of them. And so I'm just kind of sitting back watching the grandchildren. I got 9 grandchildren. I watch how they function. But my kids know I expect the most out of them, the most. Don't tell me you can't.
Well, and absolutely, you got a plan for that stuff. I paid for my grandson's tuition out of my pocket, $60,000 a year plus.
That's nice.
Now,
that's
his first
nice.
Year, practically
that's
everything nice. Was free because of his scholarship.
That's nice. That's nice because I did it with my grandson.
All my kids. My kids finished college, they got at least a six-figure check from me. And he did
beautiful,
too.
Beautiful. Well,
so
I know
that's what you got to plan for.
Yes. Well, my grandson cutting in on you, is 32 years old now, and my wife and I, you know, we gave him over $80,000. He wanted to sing. He wanted to be a good singer. So he was living here in Fresno at the time, and he wanted to become a singer. And I said, okay, it takes money, plus it takes work. He's been in it for nine. Lee, I've told you about him. He's down
is that
in
the
LA
that's
now.
Not the rapper though, is he?
Yeah, that's who it is.
Okay,
he's down in
right.
LA.
Yeah.
He's down in LA now, and he's going big. But I expected that. He know what I expect. But we put money on. Sometime you have to. But what I was saying to you, did you grow up with any money? We had no money. We didn't have any money. All we have was.
Well, I came from a well-to-do family because they the practices and the steadfastness was passed down. But it's another thing too. It's a lot of blacks that's doing what we're talking about. People
sure
make this sound like something from Mars. It ain't something from Mars. You got black families that do this all the time. You just
that's
don't.
Right.
And I tell you, somebody else who doesn't. Better than anybody else in this country, including whites and Asians, and that's the Nigerians.
Yes. Now, you.
Yeah, they're
what
the highest income ethnic group in the country.
At any time, they're the highest educational attainment and highest household income than whites and Asians.
Well, my
Nigerians.
Yeah, you're right.
My daughter been back there. She went back there about 2 or 3 years ago, and she was telling me, she said, Dad, you wouldn't believe the way the black Africans, they live in Africa. She went through all parts of Africa there. She said, that's the wealthiest land in the world. I didn't know that, see. And they have their own.
Yeah, yesterday we talked about a guy, Taft, what's his name, Mustafa NG. Owns Taft Global.
Let me tell you something else. Your idea don't sell mama's house. You don't own land in Africa. You lease that land. If you're an outsider, which includes black America, you lease that land for 50 years. If you're a native, You leased that land for 99 years. You never own it.
That's the same way in Hawaii. Did you know
now,
that?
Now, you're told that up front, though. That's the thing. You're told that up
oh,
front.
Oh, yeah, you know it. They say yeah. make it clear. You don't own this land. This all, the land belongs to the people, meaning
that's
the tribe.
That's the same way
right.
it is in Hawaii. Hawaii has the same. I think you can own land in Hawaii for 99 years.
Well, even in this country, I'm looking at with the property tax situation, which you know, you got to have infrastructure, you need money for all that. I get all that. It a lot of people think they, you know what, that's getting into a whole other discussion. And it's we're over time, and I don't want to drop blog talk to drop us. Look, thank you. Reba, you still there? Our light's on.
I am still here, yes.
All right, yeah. Reba, any
from the grandfather.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Reba, any closing comments? Because we're going
to
wrap it up.
Well, certainly my dad, I'm grateful that my dad was able to share some of the same type of wisdom that you guys were able to share with your grandsons, because they still talk about some of those things. And I think that is part of what inspired. My brother certainly was inspired to install his own jacuzzi, you know. My brother was supposed to be an engineer. My dad did tell us what we were supposed to be. My sister's not a doctor, but she's a nurse. My brother is his own engineer. He went into law enforcement.
Beautiful.
And I've always been an educator, and I do have a law background, so I was
beautiful.
Finishing my
yeah.
law degree. So
that's,
I do appreciate that structure.
That's you got a clubhouse tonight, or you got a night off?
So we certainly do a clubhouse tonight because it's Thursday, and I will be coming live from the Grand Ballroom, Chicago.
Oh, okay, great. Albert, any closing comments?
All I have to say is I enjoyed the show, talking to different minds on the show. But I think it helps the minority a lot, which, you know, you educating them to the point of this is reality, and I enjoy dealing with reality. And that's
all right.
What I'm
about. And, Bianca, you got the last word of the day. Your comment, if any. Bianca,
start planning early, and if you work on paper, the likelihood of it working in real life is good, and start at it and stick to it. Your goal is to finish. Don't fail.
That's right.
Think on paper. All right, that's it. Thank you all. Everyone have a good rest of the day.
Okay, give me a copy.
All right, thanks, I'll give you a call probably tomorrow.